Well, Queens, I have a special guest with me today. My friend and previous client, she'll share her story in a moment from a while ago, Beth. So, Beth, welcome to the Body Love Binge.
Thank you.
I'm going to go into 10 quick fire questions to break the ice and have a bit of fun. So, you ready?
Right, go on then.
The first one is like a three in one, but I'm taking it as one. So, name, age, and your profession.
Beth, 30, and a solicitor.
Number two, sweet or savory?
Savory.
Three, early bird or night owl?
Night owl,
Number
definitely.
four. Oh, I'm intrigued with this one actually. Weights or cardio?
Weights.
Weights. Five,
Yeah.
three things you love.
Oh, three things I love. Well, the first one that came to mind was Georgie, my daughter, and then my dog and food.
Yay!
Yeah.
I'm with you on that one. I love how Rich got replaced with food.
Oh my God, I didn't even think of him. Oh
That's
God.
hilarious. Sorry, not sorry, Rich.
Yeah.
Number six. Do you have a favorite quote or mantra or a quote or mantra that got you by when you were in difficult times?
Well, yeah, I've got two that straight away came to mind. The first one is you need to feel to heal. And the second one is whatever you resist in your life will persist in your life.
Truth. Number seven, something you like that others might consider strange or weird, if anything.
Something I like. Oh, that's a difficult one. I can't think of anything. But I know I don't like sweet things, so I don't like chocolate.
Yeah, that's really weird. Totally,
Yeah.
that's weird.
So that's easier. Yeah, I don't like sweet things, cakes, biscuits, chocolate. I don't like that. And
Did you
people
when we were
often
working
react that way.
together?
No.
I remember sweet and I remember salty, crunchy things. You
Yeah,
like bread.
bread, crisps. Crisps and a dip, bread. I'm savory all the way. I've never liked sweet things.
That's so interesting. Okay, number eight, three things you love about yourself.
How I'm capable of having difficult conversations. I like to get, some people find it quite. They're taken aback a little bit, but I like to ask deep questions. Like if I feel something with somebody, even if I've just met them, I can ask like a quite a deep question. But I actually think that's a quality about myself because I don't like to skirt around the edges,
Yeah.
you know. So I love that about myself. I like I'm very caring. I care a lot, and I feel things deeply. That comes with sometimes it's not easy because you feel the not so great things. Like I'm quite a sensitive person, but I think that allows me to experience the highs like deeply.
Yeah, I have never met anyone who hasn't had an eating disorder that isn't both highly intuitive and empathetic and feelings so strongly.
Yeah, it's it can knock you off your feet a little bit because if you feel hurt or if somebody's treated you unfairly or you feel like you've been treated unfairly, it can sit with me for days. You know, it and it really you I feel it in my gut, you know, when you feel like unsettled.
It's a gift for sure, but every single thing comes with a pro and a con. I think everything kind of comes
Balance. I can't go through life just I'm not a you know like an easygoing like just breezing through life. I'm not like that. I'm quite a deep person.
Yeah, I love that. All right, number nine. If you could be a mythical creature or an animal, what would you be and why?
Oh. I don't know why, but a sloth just came to mind.
You know what that's representing? This is just Victoria's made up version of this. You need to,
Oh.
you're being invited to rest more and just
Right.
hang around and do
Yeah.
nothing.
I do love hanging around and doing nothing. I love that. That's
There you go.
why. I love the days when you don't have plans and you can just chill. They don't
I
happen
do too.
often. And now I've got a nearly 10-month-old little girl that, I don't get that much time to chill, but
Sloth. I love that. I've never had someone say a no, I don't think I've had someone say a sloth before. I love that. Okay, last one. Imagine this. Fast forward to the very distant future when you're on your deathbed and you're like 200 years old and you're looking back over your life. What are you most proud of about your life? So obviously, of course, this could be something in the future from now, or it could be something that's already happened. It depends what comes to you.
Just like how, I mean, obviously I'm 30, but I do feel like I've overcome quite a lot. It's really hard, isn't it, to imagine, because who knows what the future has in store for me. So my deathbed, other things may come to mind, but looking back over my life now, I feel like I'm proud of where I've got to in my life, and nothing's been given on a plate, and there's been a lot of hard work professionally and personally. But I've done the work to get to this point, to be in a good place, and I'm proud of what I've overcome. There's been quite a lot.
Yeah,
Quite
I know you. I mean, we've not spoke for a bit, but obviously with coaching together, I knew quite a lot about you. And yeah, it's a lot to be where you are.
Yeah. And a lot of the things that we touched on when during our coaching went back to my childhood and my relationships with my parents. But yeah, to get to where I am now, to overcome that, to be able to have sort of opened the lid on those boxes and deal with them to allow me to have a healthy relationship now with myself and others.
Yes, beautiful. So let's dive into when we first met. I mean, we were just discussing before we pressed record, weren't we? Like, how, when was it? We're going to go with about 2 years ago. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think that's right, yeah.
And you came to me through Instagram. So do you mind sharing, like, what position you were in, what your life was like at that point, and then why you decided to reach out to me.
I was trying to remind myself of this before we had the call, because I thought you would want to go back to the very start. And I feel like the word that springs to my mind is despair at that point. When I found you, I feel like I was in a state of despair. I think it's hard to go back to that point, but I think it wasn't long after I'd had a letter from an eating disorder clinic saying that because my BMI was in the healthy range, I wasn't considered to be somebody that needed help. And I get that resources are low and there are people that are in worse positions, but I needed help, and I went through the doctors, I went through the usual channels, and I got a letter back that basically said in black and white, you're not sick enough. And honestly, like that was so hard to receive that letter, because I'm sure the thought that went through my head, and I wonder if it would go through other people's head, was okay, so I've got to get worse before I get any help. And that makes me so angry. That makes me so angry, because not everybody's in a fortunate enough position to seek private counselling and therapy. I mean, thankfully I was. But yeah, I was in a real sorry state, really. And also had suicidal feelings, self-harming feelings, just felt like I didn't want to live with this anymore. With my relationship with food being so traumatic, it's hard to go back now and think about how I was, but just so consumed, obsessed with food.
Yeah.
Possessed by it. I can't think of other words to describe it, to get across how poorly I was, and how little space I had in my life for joy and good things, because I was so consumed by my relationship with food and all that that brings with it, and how that affects everything in, well, it affected everything in my life.
Yeah. And what were your behaviors at that point? So people will definitely be able to relate to what you're saying. But what were your food behaviors? Was it restricting? Was it binging? Was it restrict, binge, purge?
It was restriction which caused binge eating.
Yeah.
So I had so many rules around food. I would see every day, the first thought that I would have when I woke up would be, today's the day. I wonder how long I'll be able to go today without eating. Now I look back now and I'm setting myself up to fail straight away.
Yeah.
But that became like my mission, notwithstanding the fact that I had like quite a pretty serious job
yes.
to do. Yet at the back of my mind, it took up a lot of headspace, you know, that task that I'd set myself. And I'd be thinking, I wonder how long, or how long I can go without eating, or how little I can eat today.
Yeah.
And I'd already be telling myself days before, or even that morning, like what I would allow myself to eat if I did allow myself to eat. Things that didn't satisfy me or fulfill me. They may have filled me physically, but not emotionally. So that'd be my first thought. And then obviously naturally my body doing its thing, protecting itself. Mid-morning, I'd be hungry. I may have done something silly like 10,000 steps before 9 o'clock as well, which for me now is just, that's not what naturally I feel called to do. Don't get me wrong, if I did, and it left me feeling energized and ready to start the day, absolutely. I mean, I've been on a lovely walk this morning and I feel great, but I did it because I wanted to do it. If I'd have woken up and thought, can't be bothered today, I wouldn't have gone, you know. Anyway, sorry that I'm digressing, but
it's important because now you're making choices from a space of love.
100%. Yeah. And I'm sure we'll come on to my relationship with food now.
Yes.
But I would get to mid-morning, body's sort of fine for me, I'm hungry. I would, you know, try and ignore that for as long as I could, possibly eat something at lunchtime that I didn't really like. And then, which, by the way, those types of foods that I was kidding myself that I liked then, I can't eat now.
Same.
I can't eat. I can't bear the thought of. I mean, I actually, for ages, couldn't eat porridge because that was a food that I would eat, would allow myself to eat then, that I sort of told myself I really, really like this. But now if I've got the choice, I mean, I know everybody's appetite and what food preferences is very personal, but I was essentially picking foods that I'd sort of put on my good list.
Yeah.
And I'd got a list of bad foods. But then in the evenings, what would happen is I would just eat some foods off my good list, not be fulfilled, and then eat so much of the bad foods that, you know, just, I don't feel like I'm explaining myself very well, but if I give an example, if I allow myself to have bread, which was a trigger food for me in the house, I felt like I couldn't think about anything else apart from the fact that there was bread in the house. And until it had all gone, I wouldn't rest. But then once I'd eaten all the bread or all the crisps or all the cheese or anything, whatever it was that I was denying myself, I would be consumed with remorse and guilt and self-hate and the desire to end my life. And it was so big, you know, and for people that have never experienced a troubled relationship with food, I'm sure that some people might think, really, why was it that bad? But when you feel like such a failure, and you feel like your appetite and everything about you is so ugly and shameful, and it's a secret, and like it's just a really ugly, dark side of yourself that nobody knows, and it's so unattractive. Every time that you sort of give in to that, you're just repeating the cycle.
And did nobody know about this then? So you mentioned secret, and obviously, of course, in secrecy, a lot of shame resides, and shame resides in the shadows, in the darkness. When we bring it into the light, it gets an opportunity to be healed when it's met with love and acceptance by another person, and then therefore you can learn how to do that for yourself. Did anyone know that you were struggling?
My mum knew, and my best friend knew, but that's it. I kept it very, I was embarrassed about it. I was embarrassed about it because going back to my childhood, I come from my mum and dad have divorced, and it wasn't a smooth separation. And as a result of that, as a child, I felt the need to be perfect and have it all together, because I needed to have it all together, because no one was really looking out for me as a kid. And unfortunately, that pattern and that thought that I had to have it all together, I had to have all the answers and be able to manage on my own, just has carried on into my early adulthood. So if I was struggling with anything, I really struggled to reveal that, because I saw it as a sign of weakness, and vulnerability. Revealing that, and also with it being tied up to food, I think for me, I've always, and I don't know where this came from, but I've always thought that my appetite, or I did then, when I was in the throes of my eating disorder, feel like my appetite was a manly, unattractive, not a feminine part of me. The fact that if somebody offered me a salad or a bacon and egg butty, what would I prefer? Well, the bacon and egg butty. I'm my dad's daughter, basically. Like, I was brought up by my dad, who's a big meat eater, loves his food. And I definitely get that from my dad. And I felt that it wasn't a feminine part of me. Like, it wasn't attractive, it was ugly, I should be like a lady and pick the salad or the fruit smoothie or whatever. And it was just not me. Like, I think coming back to me at the center of it, like, I just really struggled to be true to myself. So it asks, so many different questions pop up and realizations, but even though I felt like I had all my shit together. Sorry, I've just swore on your podcast, but
Beth, remember who I am.
yeah.
All this fucking time on the podcast. It's
But
fine.
I feel like, even though I had this sort of imbalance, because professionally I was a very polished piece, I had my shit together, but personally I felt a mess. I lacked self-esteem, I lacked self-confidence, I couldn't be true to myself because I couldn't even eat the foods that I wanted to eat without feeling such shame. I was sort of conforming to what I thought people expected of me, and all that stuff. For me, it presented itself in a very unhealthy relationship with food. And it was something that I tried so desperately to control with everything I had, going against my biology, effectively starving myself. And what I tried so desperately to control was actually the most out of control thing in my entire life.
Why did you stop
I
restricting in
wanted
the first
so
place?
much.
Oh, sorry, it just glitched and I just interrupted you. Sorry, Beth.
I was just going to say, I wanted so much to change my appetite. I wished that I didn't feel hunger. I wished that I could take a tablet that would meet all my nutritional needs and, settle my hunger cravings. But then I would be denying myself so much joy. Because I, in my heart, I am a real foodie.
Yeah.
But at the time, I wasn't prepared to allow myself that joy that food does bring to my life.
It brings so much joy to my life as well.
Yeah.
I'm so
And I
grateful
mean,
for food.
people used to suggest going out for meals and you know, socializing with food, and it'd be on my mind for days before. I'd have to look at the menu to sort of tell myself what I would allow myself to eat, rather than going to the restaurant and ordering what I fancied in that moment. Because I don't know now, if I know I'm going out for a friend's birthday next weekend, I don't know now what I'm going to fancy next weekend.
Until the actual time next weekend when you're actually there.
Yeah. But then I would want to go analyze the menu to see what I could tell myself would be okay to eat. I'd get to the restaurant. I'd also be consumed by these thoughts, so I wouldn't be entirely present with the person that I was meeting. And then I would either, I mean, it was such a repetitive thing, but I would either order what I told myself I was allowed to order and then be miserable and then binge when I got home.
Yeah, that was my pattern too.
Or I would order what I wanted to order, the burger and the chips, feel so much shame and disappointment. I'd be telling myself, you're a fucking failure. You're disgusting. You can't even go to a meal and eat what you've told yourself you're allowed to eat. You're a failure. You can't do this one little thing, which is so sad that I
It
would do that
is.
to myself. And then I would go home and binge through self-hate.
Yeah.
So either way, I was binging.
Yeah. Why did you start the restriction in the first place? Because I want to go into your story with perhaps the fitness,
Oh,
the body image stuff. And remember that time you shared when we were coaching that a hat didn't fit your actual bone on your head. And you had like a massive freak out because an actual hat didn't fit your head. Can you
yeah.
remember?
Clothes sizing in general was a huge thing for me, which is. I can say it now, but I don't want it to come across like I'm being flippant about it, because at the time it was very real.
Yeah.
You know, now I can honestly say I'll buy the thing that fits my body, but then I wasn't in that place at all. No way. But yeah, how I got into it. So I think my relationship with food had been up and down for quite a long time, a few years. But then I was living in London. I've been living in London for 6 years. And then COVID lockdown hit. And my parents, who live up in Yorkshire, my mum and my stepdad said, look, you need to come home because we don't know how long this is going to be in place for. And you're on your own down in London, literally living on your own. So you're going to be working from home and it's going to be really bad for you. So come home and work from here. So I did. And the only thing that was sort of going at that time was gyms. And I just decided that I'd go to the gym with my neighbour, my mum's neighbour. And it just became this little community. And I just thought, I don't feel like it was a switch, but I just got it in my head that I was gonna lose weight, and this was gonna be the time, and I was gonna get in the best shape of my life. That was gonna be the focus. And then through being in the gym, I knew that there were some people there that were bikini body athletes, and they were like aspirational in the gym, you know, looking at these people in awe. And I just decided, being the person I am, like quite a high achiever, you know, not able to just dip my toe in things. And this is a quality of myself now that I see as a quality. When I set my mind on something, I give it everything I've got. But I do have to keep that in check and recognize what's healthy and what's not, you know. And I'm not the type of person that can just do a little bit of something and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Like if I do something, I've got to be the best. Like for me, I've got to be the best. So I'm smiling now because it seems surreal, but I'd set my heart on becoming a bikini body athlete and going up and being on stage
I
and
have a
winning.
question around that. So go, and I'm smiling too, because you and I both know how similar we are in that regard, or was in that regard, with the high achieving thing. What do you think you were wanting to feel when you decided you wanted to be a bikini athlete? So you said those women in the gym were aspirational
Oh,
to you. What was
admired.
it you were seeking?
Validation. I wanted to be admired. I wanted attention from men. I was single at the time. You know, I wanted to be like glorified in a way. Like, I wanted to be on the stage. I wanted people to be interested in me.
Why do you think, I mean, that's probably a silly question on the surface, because of course, who doesn't want that? But at a deeper level, for you to take the action to begin with, why? Why did you desperately want that?
I think because I was so unhappy and insecure in myself deep down. And I think because I didn't have the capacity at that point in my life to be true to myself.
Yes.
Like when I've touched before on, you know, my appetite being a shameful part of myself, you know, if I followed these rules with my food and somebody else had complete control over it, it was easier.
Yeah.
It was easy for me. Even though it wasn't easy what I was doing, because I was starving. I was literally starving. But my goal just overshadowed that. And also, a thought that's just come to my mind then was my coach at the time, I felt cared for.
Ah, interesting.
I
Yeah.
felt cared for.
Yeah.
But now I look back and I was paying him.
Yeah.
You know, I was paying him. It was his reputation. He was a bodybuilder, a former bodybuilder. He had a client base of people that were aspiring to just get in better shape or change. You know, not everybody that he coached was an aspiring athlete. But when I was his client and when I was in, you know, an unhealthy headspace with an eating disorder, which I never revealed to him at the time,
Oh, wow.
I never told him about the fact that I had a poor relationship with food. I did feel cared for, you know. It was cared for in the sense of like every week I would send pictures of myself in a bikini and we'd look at how much weight I'd lost and how my midsection was looking and how my glutes were looking. It's crazy. It's crazy because it's not me.
Yeah.
It's not me.
It was your survival self, that you were being that self in order to survive and cope with all the emotions and needs that were unmet as a child.
Yeah. And I'd met a bunch of girls in the gym. I was getting a lot of attention off men. Felt like it was a great time. Felt like it was great.
Until it wasn't.
But it didn't last. Didn't
Yes.
last.
There's the thing.
I fell down quickly and hard and went to like when I compare, I don't want anybody to feel like I'm blaming anybody for this because it was my decision, but I felt like my eating disorder before I started bodybuilding and aspiring to be a bodybuilder, bikini athlete, like was nothing compared to what that restriction led to.
Yep. I
Because
agree with you. I mean, just to share, I mean, you know my story anyway, but just to share with the listeners, yes, I had the genetics for anorexia. And if you had the genetics for anorexia, you would also be in that category. So, but when I was like a teenager, I was diagnosed with anorexia. So, discounting that period of my life, the gym and the obsession with not just thinness, because anorexia is more than just thinness, because it's a genetic thing and control thing as well. But the fitness world, without blaming them, fucked me up more than the anorexia nervosa, which was literally killing me. And I know you know what that feels like, because it's not just being thin, it's having rounded glutes and rounded shoulders, and then being tucked in here and then having a quad sweep there. And every single piece of your body is scrutinized and obsessed over. And you just become completely, I love the word you use, possessed.
Oh, I do feel like I was possessed, because I feel like if I had bread in the house, I couldn't think about anything other than the bread that was like screaming at me from the cupboard. I mean, I used to avoid getting all those foods in the house, but then when I had a fuck it moment, which they came frequently, fuck it.
Because you were starving.
Yeah. And it's like, it'd be, oh, well, a fuck it moment could be, for example, on the back of going out for a meal with a friend and not ordering what I wanted, what I told myself I was allowed to, and ordering the burger and the chips, and then thinking, oh, well, because you're such a failure and blah, 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 all that, those negative comments that I've said earlier, well, I've eaten that, so I might as well go all out. So then on the way home, I would go to the supermarket and like stock up on all my forbidden fruits and either eat them all, but eat obscene amounts that I couldn't eat now. I couldn't eat now.
Yeah.
The irony of the situation was I ate way more, because I would have eaten either I would have eaten the good option, the allowed option, and then binge. So I've eaten both. Or I'd have eaten what I wasn't allowing myself and then binged because of the shame associated with it. So only when I actually allowed food in however and whatever quantity, then did it slowly, did I start to recover?
Let's dive into that. So, and by the way, in case we go over, I want to check with you for time first. Have you got an extra 10 minutes after the hour?
Yeah, time for time.
You're fine for time. Okay, good. So think back to when we first started working together. And of course, I'm there saying the only way through to freedom is allowance, allowance, allowance. And you're like, what the fuck? What happened in that those first couple of weeks? Can you remember? And then how quickly did you start to see and trust that, oh, wow, this is actually, quote, working, whatever working means, you know?
Well, the one thing that I don't want sort of people to take lightly is the fear.
Yes.
The fear of, I mean, I wanted to recover desperately because I knew that this wasn't right. I knew that having to be accompanied to the supermarket so I wouldn't go down certain aisles wasn't right. I knew that eating a full loaf of bread wasn't right. I say right because it wasn't right for me.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason why you were feeling compelled to eat a whole loaf of bread.
Yeah. I mean, that's not usual behaviour, you know. It's, and I was totally out of control with food. I was totally out of control with it. Eating a full jar of peanut butter. I mean, I was making myself poorly, but it's because I wasn't, the actual hunger is in like hunger and fullness cues, which by the way, I totally messed up. But I wasn't eating to fill an actual hunger, like a physical hunger.
Yeah.
So no matter how much food, a jar of peanut butter, I could probably still have opened up the second one, because no matter how much food I would eat, wouldn't fill the hole that I was trying to fill.
Yes.
Or wouldn't kill the, I don't know, there was so much shame and,
there's two things. There was the biological stuff that your body was starving, so it was needing calories, end of. It didn't care if you were full, it just wanted to eat more. There was that part of it. And there was also, like you said, that kind of emotional hole that you felt that you were trying to numb and fill. There was like two things, well, probably more than two. There were so many layers to all of it.
Yeah, and I also think like it's a form of self-harm as well. Like literally the manner in which I would eat frantically, secretly, you know, not in the way that I'm not in a comfortable way, not relaxed. I wouldn't have been relaxed when I've been eating the foods. I'd have been frantic and, you know, not happy, crying, sad, angry, all, you know, such a negative time. Just not good. So what was your question about
when you first started this journey, and obviously
The fear,
the allowance and the fear,
what I remember being a bit of a crutch for me was the fear, and getting over that fear was, it was so real. I would have honestly at times rather have died than being in a bigger body, because of what that meant, like not getting any attention off men. I hate to say it because I'm embarrassed to say that now.
Well, I shared the same feelings, remember, like everything you shared with me. And when I mirrored back to you that, Beth, I literally was the same. You at least you felt seen and understood.
Oh, I definitely did. But, you know, I feel it's embarrassing. I felt to say that I, so much of it was based on how much attention I was getting from others. You know, it was something inside me that I needed to heal. But
it's a cry for love. That's what it was.
Yeah. And, you know, the fear of accepting that, you know, if I just allow, I just felt like I would eat and eat and eat and eat and eat and nobody would stop. Nobody would be able to stop me. I wouldn't be able to stop. And I don't know, I just thought I'd just like become absolutely massive. And that the idea of that was so scary. You know, the idea of people talking about me and seeing me and sort of saying, criticizing my appearance, and I was so scared about all of that. I was so scared because all I knew at the time was those foods, I'm out of control with those foods. So if I actually allow myself to just eat as much as I'm never going to stop, like I will literally get massive.
Yeah.
And that's a really bad thing for me. That's what I was thinking at the time. Like that fear was real. As I say, it did make me feel suicidal. I just felt so down, that accepting that I'd have to go through that. But I think just obviously through coaching, just having trust that I'll end up being back in tune with my body and my appetite, and but it'll take time. It's not a quick fix. So that's, you know, I had to make a decision really, and it wasn't a linear road to recovery. Wasn't like, it was literally like, you know, depths, big highs, big lows.
What helped you? I know you've just spoke to it briefly, but what helped, because this is what so many of my listeners struggle with, and I understand, of course I do, and you will too, that fear like seems to like just hit you like a ton of bricks, like a massive wall, even though you want what is behind that wall with your whole life. Sometimes that fear does keep people stuck. Can you give any advice from your own experience of what you've thought about what got you through that brick wall to get to the other side?
I think asking myself, I'm either continuing to live in this misery or a willingness to give it a go. Because I wasn't living life.
You wasn't living
it
anyway.
I couldn't do it anyway. I couldn't diet anyway. So I was kidding myself. Because on those mornings when I'd wake up and think, I wonder if today's the day when I won't be able to eat until 7 o'clock this evening. I never ever got to 7 o'clock without eating, and it was never a good experience if I did.
Yeah.
I hope I'm sort of being clear, but you know, it
you're
was
just
just
so done with where you were. That was my story too. I was done. I physically, emotionally, spiritually was done. So it was almost like death or the unknown and the fear of getting fat, basically.
I was just going to say, because being where I was making me feel suicidal because of that repetitive cycle, which I just said, setting myself these silly little goals every day. And I never, ever achieved them, which was just giving me this continuing notion of hating myself. I couldn't, that was, hating myself was causing me to feel suicidal. So that was, I couldn't continue with that, you know. So there wasn't really, when I look at it, I mean, obviously I did have a choice to embark on recovery. But really, the other option was ending my life. Because that's how bad I felt. So when you put it like that, I like you say, I had to sort of go into the unknown. And I think finding you and feeling a connection and having that initial conversation and feeling understood and not psycho
Yes.
made like finding a coach that is right for you. Well, that was the key for me to unlock like recovery. But it was a long process, a very long process. And at the time, I was single. And one of the things that kept me, well, was a big hurdle to overcome was I wanted to find a partner. So I wanted to date.
I remember.
And I mean, we had at times, like, I mean, obviously, when we were coaching, you were incredibly supportive and always there for me. But at times, we had quite heated conversations about it because I was getting angry. And I remember being like, you don't understand because you're with somebody who loves
Yeah.
you through thick and thin, as the saying goes. But I didn't have that person, and I desperately wanted to be with somebody. I wanted a relationship. And so I wanted to go out into the world and be attractive to the opposite sex. And that didn't feel like it went hand in hand with recovery because I knew that allowing probably the reality of it is, and it was my reality, lead to weight gain initially. Because the trust that I ended up building with my body that I've got now didn't happen overnight.
No, trust
Because I'd
takes
spent
time to be built with any body, and even including your own body.
Years and years denying everything my body had been wanting for me.
Yeah.
So it was not a quick fix at all. And we talked about it a lot because I was going on dates and spending ages getting ready and not going. I mean, even when I went on my first date with Rich, my partner now, Georgie's dad, my mum was with me and I was 25 minutes late. He was stood outside waiting for me. He knows exactly the reason why now. My mum was with me and she was with me, persuading me to go because I didn't like anything that I put on. Didn't look right. I didn't feel attractive. And then you don't want to go on a date not feeling attractive.
Yeah.
It was very hard. It was very hard.
When did it
Being
start to sh shift for you? So you did tr you could trust me and surrender to the process and allow me to guide you. Obviously, you did the work. There's nothing I could physically, I couldn't do the work for you. You did all the work, but you showed up for yourself. And I think that's one of the characteristics. Like I say to everyone who has developed an eating disorder, 99.999% of them have that high achieving perfectionist traits. That's exactly what supports you in recovery, isn't it? Because I remember one message, and I remember exactly where I was walking the dog when I sent it to you, and I used yourself against you because I was said something like, "So does Beth now take the easy way out then and just like go off, you skip back to restriction?" And you were like, "Absolutely not. I am not taking, I'm all in." So
Yeah,
thank
and
you all
see, I
in.
needed that, and I
Yeah.
needed that at the time. I think being completely honest, like when I allowed the foods, I literally went and bought so much bread, crisps, butter, everything I'd be denying myself, to the point I physically couldn't eat anymore. And I actually said that every meal that I would make, I started eating regularly. So, in a way, I did have to get a handle on my relationship with food. And I don't believe in rules around food, but I did have to start initially by following some sort of rules, I guess, to get a
Guidelines.
bit of guidelines is the best thing, yeah, by eating regularly.
Yes,
But
like
then,
breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks.
if I felt hungry in between, allowing, obviously.
Yes.
But to begin with, I did need to get a grip and get some guidelines in place because it was so erratic. And I remember for me, bread was a big trigger food. So to begin with, I would allow bread at every meal. So I'd either have a slice of bread. And over time, it's a cliche, but time is what did it for me. But over time, I just became not bothered. And I never, ever thought that day would come.
Yeah.
Honestly, I would have put money on that day never coming. I honestly thought I was just a mad lover of bread. But now, and, you know, after time, I could take it or leave it. I'm honestly not bothered. Not bothered.
It's amazing, isn't it? What allows
I'm not even that bothered. I mean, if I, you know, I'm not bothered about it. It doesn't occupy any headspace. But now I will eat whatever I want, whenever I want, whatever it is. And I've got no shame in that whatsoever. And the ironic thing is now I'm in a smaller body than what I was.
That's so ironic.
But I eat so much less. But once my focus on the way I looked, once there'd been a shift in the focus being my appearance and seeking validation,
yes,
and actually just being true to myself, over time, I've just got it. Just my relationship with food just doesn't. It's not a thing for me anymore.
It's just you're human, so you just eat.
Yeah.
How do
I know that sounds so simple, and it is. And me and my mum often, like, remind ourselves. Like, she'll say, "Do you remember that time when, you know?" And I'm like, it feels like a different person.
Yeah, I feel that for myself. Do you remember when, because I think it's worth speaking to this, you had a lot of fear of being hungry. So when you were out and about, and I suggested taking cereal bars in your bag so you had some safety, because you were so afraid of being hungry because you'd starved yourself for so long.
Yeah.
Do you remember you had that fear of, like, not having enough food when you were hungry?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
You
And
just
that's like you say, because that came from the bodybuilding really, and having a set amount to eat at set meal times, but being so hungry afterwards, and knowing that you're probably just always going to be hungry, basically. But the fear of hunger, again, once I let go of the bodybuilding dream, and then really did go into the throes of binge eating disorder, starving, restricting myself, and then binge eating, the fear of hunger actually caused me to eat. I ate loads more in when I wasn't actually physically hungry, but through fear of being hungry.
Yeah, in the future, impending hunger, but
Yeah.
impending restriction. It's the fear of impending
Yeah.
restriction.
And also, eating, like, the reason why I would eat a full loaf of bread, which I haven't explained, but the reason why I would eat the full loaf of bread or all of the crisps or the full block of cheese or whatever it was because, A, I wouldn't know when I would allow myself to eat again. So it's that trust. So, you know, when I mentioned having those guidelines in place, that was because I needed to know that I would be eating again in a few hours.
Yeah.
And so I became more relaxed around it. But also, so there was that side of it, eating everything because I wouldn't know when I would allow myself to eat again. So I had to be so full. It was a protection. My body was protecting me.
Absolutely.
But simultaneously, it was also because I wanted to get rid of all the food.
Yeah.
Because then I was thinking,
fear all in all different ways.
I was thinking to myself, well, if I eat all this bread now, then maybe tomorrow I'll be able to start again, draw the line, and I'll start again. I will be able to diet tomorrow. But I was kidding myself. I was totally
Tomorrow
kidding
never
myself.
comes.
I was kidding myself because every single day I failed.
Because your biology was like, no, we're here to survive, not to starve.
And just the mental process of restricting the forbidden fruit, right?
Yes,
And that's why
absolutely.
when you asked me at the start, what was one of my sayings and my mantras? Whatever you resist persists.
Yep.
So where every single time I was thinking, I'm going to have a poached egg on a rice cracker or whatever for my lunch. But all I was thinking about was, I keep saying a bacon sandwich. Maybe I want a bacon sandwich. I don't know. All I was thinking, bacon sandwich. That's what I want. I'd eat what I told myself I was allowing to eat, but I could still think, all I was thinking about was the bacon sandwich, what I'd not allowed myself. It was persisting, it was persisting, it was persisting. And then funnily enough, come nighttime, I would eat 10 bacon sandwiches.
Exactly. How did you, because I'm really curious about this question, how did you start to come back into connection with your authentic self?
I think allowing myself the foods that I truly wanted,
Yeah.
you know, forgetting all this good food, bad food, just allowing myself the flexibility to have whatever I wanted. And whenever as well. And I think in time when, you know, I didn't believe it would happen, but the cravings, there was more space for other things, and cravings started to subside, and I would have got to the point where I actually didn't want to eat the bread at the meal time because I just didn't want it. I didn't fancy it. I mean, that for me was like a revelation. I know it's people that don't have experience of it must think, why are you so, I don't know, focused or possessed by food? And it's because I restricted.
Exactly.
It's because I restricted.
Yeah.
That it had that power.
What about, so last, I could keep going talking to you, last big question, then I want to wrap up. Weight gain, the fear of weight gain, when it did start to happen.
Yeah.
Tell me how you navigated that, because that's most people's, and yours and mine was the biggest fear ever.
Yeah, that was really, really hard because I did gain weight because it took a while for my body to become its natural body shape and size. Yeah, there was a lot of, I don't want to be flippant about it, because there was a hell of a lot of downs and a lot of tears, a lot of crying, not wanting to go out. And it was a really dark time. But I did have like my mum and my best friend who knew about it and were able to comfort me. And then I think the realization that the people that love me for me are still there, you know, and then I did find my person as well.
Yeah.
And I did the work before I met Rich, but because after my coaching with you finished, there was a period of time I was out in the world on my own. And then, you know, me and Rich, obviously, when we got together, we were socialising a lot and living our best life and going out and eating and drinking and having a lot of fun. I did feel like I was gaining weight. I wasn't binge eating at that point, but I was gaining weight and I really struggled with that. And then I got back in touch with you and we had more coaching, because it wasn't going to set me back to where I was at the start. But I feel like practical things that I did to help me was to get rid of all the clothes that no longer fit me.
Yeah.
And that was a hard thing to do, because I mean, I kept some things that fit me when I was like 21. And like, my body's changed. My body's not a static thing. You know, it's changed in life. And I got rid of clothes that didn't fit me, that felt uncomfortable. And that's not an easy thing to do for everybody, because obviously to go out and buy a full new wardrobe costs a lot of money. So there's a lot to this, you know, there's a lot to recovery that people should appreciate. You know, when you're supporting somebody, it's not an easy thing. There's so many complexities to it. But I think having some clothes that I did feel good in massively helped me.
Did you do any, well, I would assume because I coached you, but mirror work, body acceptance, mirror work.
And just sort of exposure, looking at myself. And as much as I didn't like certain parts of my body as they were changing, being grateful for the fact that my body, you know, understanding for me, it might be the way that I'm wired, but the biology behind restricting and binging really helped me. So understanding that my body had actually been fighting for me whole time. And that was something for me to feel grateful for. And then I was sad, you know, at times I was sad at the way that I treated myself and what I said to myself and how much of a hard time I'd given myself. And that was through mirror work. You know, looking at myself, like accepting myself for the way I am. But yeah, that wasn't easy. But also like self-care as well. Like I realized through coaching that I really struggled to feel down. And like food was a coping mechanism for me. So actually making time to recognize, hang on a minute, I feel off it. Why do I feel off it? And okay, that's maybe that. You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna think about that. I'm gonna sit with it. I might run myself a bath. I might light a candle and I might journal. Like actually before our call today, I did sort of sit down with my old journal, which I've still got here.
Yes. That was a gift, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh it's
yeah, I got you that gift.
Why is it not? I can't figure this out because
I can see it. It's back, it's opposite.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there was the no tie thing.
Yeah.
Remember that.
So there's Jasper on there. There's a love heart with a crown. There's some cheese and an avocado, which is still a firm favourites. There's weights, which interestingly, I mean, I don't have much time anymore because I've got a baby now. Obviously, life's changed a lot for me in a short space of time. But none of this would have been possible if I'd have stayed stuck where I was.
No.
Obviously, there's a pair of tights with a big cross through them. And then there's like a law book on there. So everything, you got this for me. And it's very precious to me. But yeah, when I look back through the notes that I wrote in here, it's quite emotional.
Yeah.
You know, to read the things I was saying and the lists of things, you know, just all the work that I did. So I'll never get rid of it because it's a big thing that I got over. But yeah, I've forgotten what we were saying now. Oh, when we were looking back, I was looking back through the notes and stuff. Yeah, I've forgotten what I'm saying. I'm sorry.
No, it's like so life changing in so many ways. And what a gift that you get to give your daughter to have a mother. I don't know why I keep losing my voice. To have a mother who loves herself, accepts herself, obviously talking about you, and who has a healthy, pleasurable relationship with food and herself. I mean, what a gift, because you broke that trauma, that cycle, wherever it came from. I mean, I know we did a lot of inner child work. You've healed that, and that will not be passed on to Georgina.
Yeah, Georgina, but we call her Georgie. Yeah, but I think it's always going to be part of me. Like, yeah. I think it's always going to be part of me, that tendency, that perfectionism, that I just have to recognize. Because I mean, I messaged you not long ago because things crop up to me. But for example, Georgie, she's growing. She's got a really chubby little legs and a big belly, and you know she's thriving, thank God. And now, as a mum, we're weaning her. She's weaning now, but you know, I want her to love her food. Like when she's excited about her food, it brings me so much joy. When she's eating and when, you know, little chubby legs, I absolutely love it. And I think it's sad, isn't it? I mean, we were exchanging messages about that shift as she gets older, where her chubby thighs won't be glamorized because they're not, because this is the world that we live in, that body shape. Chubbiness just isn't glamorized in the same way as thinness. We know that. That's the reality. And it's so dangerous, but you know, I'm just gonna have to be so pro her being true to herself and her appetite, and hopefully, you know, she'll be absolutely fine.
You'll be modeling in so many ways, and she'll. I mean, I'm not a mother, but I know from knowledge and working with mums, like your children, as I'm sure you know, Beth, just are sponges to you and just copy everything you model. So because you now have a healthy relationship with yourself, she will also know how to have a healthy relationship with herself. So it's just such a gift. And I could keep going, but my last question for you, Beth, is someone who is listening or watching this and is deeply resonating with what you shared at the beginning of your journey, what you were struggling with, they might be there themselves and have the same fears that you had. Is there anything that you would say to them right now if they were in the position you used to be in?
I've got loads to say, really. I just want to give that person a massive hug and let them know that it will be okay. But I think letting go of that, getting to grips with and letting go of the desire to be in a certain body shape or whatever that's mean, whatever that means for everybody, everybody's different, but letting go of it. And trusting the process, like your body has got you. And I know you will have said that to me so many times, but letting go of those rules, because it sounds cliche, but honestly, like there is so much joy that you can't experience fully while you're so caught up in the throes of an eating disorder. And it's hard because in the moment, it's your life. And fear is real. So I don't want to be flippant about it because that fear is so real. I mean, I cried and cried and cried. And you question, am I doing, is this the right way to go? Maybe I can try one more. I'll just try one more diet. But it never worked. It never worked. And for me, it'd just be just let it go. That desire to be, always on the rules and in that pattern, just let it go and trust the process because there is another life out there. And now I can honestly say food doesn't occupy any headspace at all. And I never thought that I'd get to that point. And it is honestly like it. I do laugh and I smile about it because I can now, but it wasn't good at the time. But I genuinely do feel like I was possessed at times. I was obsessed and I was possessed by food. It was something I desperately tried to control that I couldn't control because it's biology. Couldn't control it. So I was always going to fail. So
And this
just to.
journey
Yeah,
has led
this
you to
just
self-love.
trust the process and do the work and stick with it and find your people that will hold you up and keep you going and remind you why you're doing it because you'll need them.
Thank
And
you,
find a
Beth.
coach, as well that you connect with.
Yeah, that's so support from a coach or friends and family is everything because we're not supposed to do this alone. We can't. We're human beings. We thrive through relationships. And like I said earlier, the shame that we have within us can only survive when we keep it within us and we keep it secret and we keep it hot, dark, and hidden. So when we share with another safe person, the healing already begins there. I mean, there's that old saying, isn't there? A problem shared is a problem halved. There's truth in that. So, Beth,
Definitely, yeah.
thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. I'm sure that has helped so many, and I can't thank you enough.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. And listeners, I will
Lovely
see you
to see
next week. And Beth, actually, can I post anything to do with you in the show notes if anyone wants to ask you on
you. Of course.
Instagram?
That's absolutely fine.
I'll pop Beth's Instagram below. So if you want to message her and reach out, let her know how inspired she was, or if you have any questions, then reach out to Beth or to me. Much love.